The organisation that exposed the tax haven secrets of the Panama Papers released a new investigation this week. It's called The Coin Laundry, and the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists describes it as a cross-border investigation by the consortium and 37 media partners that reveals how crypto exchanges profit off the proceeds of scams, theft, and other crimes. Spencer Woodman is the lead reporter on the ICIJ's coin laundry investigation, and I'm very pleased to say that he joins us now. Spencer, welcome to Sunday Extra.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So the focus of this investigation is crypto exchanges. What are some of the names of the most well-known crypto exchanges? And while we're at it, what exactly is a crypto exchange?
I'd say the primary focus of this investigation is crypto exchanges, but we were looking at a really broad range of tools that money launderers in cryptocurrency use, which sometimes does include crypto exchanges, but we'll get into all of that nuance a little later. So a crypto exchange, you can think of as a big bank of cryptocurrency. That's the closest analog. Of course, you know, cryptocurrency, just to kind of break it down into basic terms, is a digital or virtual currency that is kind of created and secured by cryptography. It is minted by no government. It is truly existing on a private network that is peer-to-peer. So you have a virtual token. I think it's valuable. You trade it with me. And that is a transfer of value on this purely private network. Crypto exchanges kind of step in and create a little more centralization, and they allow users to more easily create accounts. They hold custody of users' assets, just like a bank, and they allow users to convert traditional currency into cryptocurrency and vice versa. And this is one of the really key points about the role of exchanges, especially with regard to crime and cryptocurrency, because the end goal of a money launderer who has either moved illicit proceeds in crypto or stolen cryptocurrency, that money launderer is very interested almost always in getting that crypto converted into traditional currency, into standard currency, so that they can spend it in the wider economy, so that they can invest it in traditional investments, so that they can pay people. So that is why cryptocurrency exchanges became such an important part of our focus of this investigation.
And it sounds like a pretty huge operation. Could you describe for us broadly the process that the ICIJ has undertaken to try and reveal the role of crypto exchanges and other devices in international money laundering?
It really took us quite a few months to even develop our methodology here, because this is a complex new area of technology that, frankly, we were not used to operating in. What we came up with was it included plenty of complexity on the back end.
Sure.
But the basic principle was fairly straightforward, and that is we went about collecting as many cryptocurrency addresses, and you can think of a cryptocurrency address as analogous to a bank account. It's a string of letters and numbers that identifies a specific cryptocurrency wallet where users can hold assets and transmit assets. We went about identifying as many crime-linked cryptocurrency addresses as possible. And it would be good to mention here that cryptocurrency generates public records of transactions. So once you are able to get a hold of cryptocurrency addresses linked to crime, you are able to do some tracing. It's not always easy, but you're able to do some tracing to see where those funds or where those assets are sent on from that wallet. So the idea here was that we're just following the money. We started with wallet addresses that were either controlled by criminals or by money laundering organizations or by organizations that are involved in very high risk activity. And we followed the money to try to find where it ended up in cases that were discernible. Sometimes you couldn't tell, but sometimes you could. And that was the core of our story.
And it seems that one of the things that you found was that suspect money was traveling through some of the biggest names in crypto exchanges. Could you give us a bit of a taste of the sort of money that you were tracking, who notionally owned it, and what intermediaries were they using?
We found three very high volume wallet addresses that were tied to something called the Hui One Group, which is a financial firm based in Cambodia that has been flagged by the US Treasury Department as a money laundering concern. It's recently been blacklisted by the Treasury Department. We traced these addresses, hundreds of millions of dollars in cryptocurrency moving outward from these addresses and into some of the world's largest cryptocurrency exchanges or accounts at some of the world's largest cryptocurrency exchanges. So the two exchanges we highlighted, especially with regards to receiving Hui One funds, are Binance and OKX. Binance is the largest crypto exchange. OKX is somewhere just right under it. Those firms told us that they take compliance very seriously. OKX told us that it had subjected at least one of those Hui One cryptocurrency addresses to heightened monitoring. And Binance said that users who transact with Hui One will be investigated by their compliance department. We also interviewed a lot of victims of very sophisticated cryptocurrency scams. This is obviously becoming a big problem, not only in Australia, but all around the world. Some of the victims we interviewed were Australian themselves. And what we did with these interviews is we heard about their stories, but we also collected the cryptocurrency addresses that these victims lost money to, that the scammers used to siphon away, in many cases, the life savings of these victims. And then we traced those funds outward too, to see where those scammer-linked wallets or those alleged scammer wallets sent their funds. And we found those funds in a number of cases ended up in OKX accounts. And we, in a number of other cases, found those funds ended up in Binance accounts. We also found those funds going into accounts at a cryptocurrency exchange called HTX, which is affiliated with the billionaire Justin Sun. And we also found victim funds, or at least wallets that collected victim funds, ultimately sending money onto accounts at the cryptocurrency exchange based in Dubai called Bybit.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Spencer Woodman, who's the lead reporter on the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists' new investigation called The Coin Laundry. And Spencer, it's interesting that you mentioned Binance and OKX, because both those crypto exchanges have, either at a corporate level or with individuals, pled guilty to breaches of financial regulations in the not-too-distant past. Does your investigation indicate whether there have been any changes or improvements in those exchanges' practices as a result of their convictions?
Right. So to step back, you know, ICIJ has reported on companies in traditional finance and now cryptocurrency that have either pleaded guilty to allowing money laundering to take place on their services, or pleaded guilty to crimes related to money laundering, or signed non-prosecution agreements with authorities relating to money laundering. For years, we've gone back to these institutions and kind of looked at how they have behaved in the wake of these agreements. And the question that kind of arises over and over again is, how seriously are these pledges taken after these enforcement actions to do better? To what extent are acts really being cleaned up, and to what extent are fines seen as the cost of doing business? So this is a question we've been asking for years at ICIJ. In the case of Binance and OKX, we looked at funds linked to criminal activity, including the Hui One funds mentioned, and also the victims of these sophisticated cryptocurrency scams. We looked at the funds pouring into their accounts after they signed their plea agreements. And so for Binance, that was in late 2023. That was for money laundering violations. For OKX, it pleaded guilty to one count of operating an unlicensed money transmitting business in the United States in February of this year. And in both cases, we see hundreds of millions of dollars from the Hui One group entering accounts at those two exchanges after their criminal plea deals.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing numbers. $408 million associated with Hui One through Binance accounts and $226 million at least through OKX accounts. There's also a connection, as I understand it, Spencer, with an extraordinary event described as, I think, one of the biggest crypto heists ever involving North Korean hackers. Could you just remind us of those events and what the connection is to the coin laundry investigation?
On February 21st of this year, North Korean state-affiliated hackers pulled off the largest cyber heist of cryptocurrency yet in history. They, going back to the exchange Bybit, which I mentioned a second ago, this group of hackers stole $1.5 billion from the exchange Bybit in cryptocurrency. We were interested in just kind of how these very sophisticated launderers went about moving that money. And in some cases, you know, according to blockchain experts, both converting the crypto they stole to more favorable assets or converting it for the reasons, according to experts, of obfuscating the trail of crypto as they moved it on and laundered it. So we looked at some Binance accounts that, and it gets a little in the weeds here, but we looked at some Binance accounts that were receiving a lot of funds from a third-party trading service that was being used by the launderers to convert one type of cryptocurrency to another type of cryptocurrency. So this is an automated swapping service. We noticed that during the 10 days that the North Korean hackers put more than $1 billion through this swapping service, the swapping service in turn sent an enormous spike of funds into just five Binance accounts. We had some experts look at this and say that these funds almost certainly included portions of the stolen cryptocurrency. It's important to note here that, according to experts, there appears to be a change of ownership in these funds. So there's no suggestion that these Binance accounts were owned by the North Korean hackers. Instead, it looks like they were on the other side of a complex series of trades where ultimately the North Korean hackers were able to conduct a big currency conversion with a lot of the original cryptocurrency going into, according to the experts, going into these Binance accounts. And there is a feeling that because this service, the swapping service, was being heavily used to launder funds, compliance experts said that Binance should have caught this and stepped in.
Yes, and I suppose that really is the regulatory question. You've described how difficult it was for the ICIJ to track these transactions. You've described them as a very complex series of trades. Is it fundamentally that complexity which makes it difficult for regulatory authorities to take action in the face of this sort of information? And maybe also, does this explain, do you think, why the crypto exchanges do not appear to be taking action when these transactions occur?
The process of the reporting this investigation raised some questions, especially about, complexity is one aspect of this, and then anonymity is another. If you talk to regulators, sometimes they will just default to saying, oh, cryptocurrency is transparent and traceable because of the public records of transactions that it creates. Over and over again, we saw that both law enforcement and the people who support them and the private companies that trace cryptocurrency continually run into anonymous addresses transmitting tons of money. And by an anonymous address, I mean a cryptocurrency address generally hosted outside an exchange. So a cryptocurrency address that you might just have access to all by yourself, that are moving huge amounts of money and that are not identifiable by the major kind of tools that help big companies understand what they're looking at in the crypto space. So, you know, there is just this question of, do exchanges understand where a lot of funds are coming from, if they are coming from these anonymous addresses? When you talk to workers at the exchanges, they basically say, look, we do our best, but it's not like TradFi where account numbers are inextricably linked to actual institutions. And then there's a related question on your other side of the question about these swapping services and the complex transactions that are, you know, in basically transparent, but only if you have a analyst manually trace back through it. So this gets into questions of transaction monitoring and stuff like that that's in the anti-money laundering space. But you know, the question of if money is just pouring out of a swapping service, hundreds of millions of dollars in this case, should you automatically treat it as clean money or should you try to figure out where it came from?
And Spencer, going all the way back to something you said at the beginning of this conversation, a critical point in this process seems to be the point at which old-fashioned traditional money is converted into crypto and vice versa. And I understand that looking into that aspect of things caused you to rack up some frequent flyer miles in this investigation. You went to Ukraine and looked at crypto-to-cash operations. What are crypto-to-cash operations? What did you find out about them?
Yeah, so there is a large and growing industry around the world of converting cryptocurrency into physical cash. It's kind of like the collision of the oldest form of money and the newest form of money, both lend themselves to a lot of anonymity. So basically, in concrete terms, a crypto to cash operations, they're either conducted out of brick and mortar offices or storefronts or what have you, or done by courier services where a courier can dispatch with a bundle of cash for you. And you provide a service with cryptocurrency and they give you physical cash. In many cases, these kind of a poorly regulated area. And they ask few questions of their customers, we found, and according to various experts in law enforcement, this is an evolving field and kind of people in law enforcement and in blockchain analytics are still trying to understand exactly the scale and the workings of this new side of the economy. But there are kind of two concerns that came up over and over again. There's this concern of the anonymity on the kind of knowing your customer. It's important for financial institutions, even money transmitters, to understand who they're doing business with. According to experts and my own reporting on the ground, visiting these exchanges, they often do not ask for customer ID. There is the additional issue of the cryptocurrency addresses that they use. So going back to this idea of this being fundamentally different from traditional finance because cryptocurrency addresses the similar thing in crypto to a bank account number can be spun up at a click of a button on your phone. And law enforcement is generally going to have no idea what they're looking at. So what can happen is that law enforcement will be tracing, and we heard this over and over again, they'll be tracing a victim's stolen life savings in cryptocurrency between anonymous wallets so that they can watch it move. They can watch these stolen funds move, but they don't know who is controlling these wallets, and they have no ability to seize the funds in those wallets. When one of those ends up at a crypto to cash operation that is also using an a wallet that law enforcement cannot understand who is behind, that criminal can use that cash operation to convert that stolen crypto into cash. Once you're in physical cash, it becomes pretty untraceable. And if they haven't asked for, if they haven't provided ID at the point of exchange, that makes it even less so. So these have become a big concern of law enforcement on the cyber crimes side of things.
What would your comments be for the average person hearing what you've found? How should ordinary people think about crypto in light of your revelations?
Well, hey, I mean, there are obviously certainly legitimate uses for crypto. I've traded crypto even before I was interested in writing about it. But in terms of just the basic public understanding of crypto, I think what I would stress is that it is a very powerful technology and a very effective technology. And it's at the moment, its powers of anonymity in particular are really appear to be outrunning that of law enforcement's ability or regulators' ability to kind of keep pace with this powerful new technology that enables a lot of financial secrecy. And essentially, that means that in a case like in criminal cases, such as if a victim gets their life savings stolen, according to all of our reporting, the chances of getting that back once it enters the anonymous swirl of crypto transactions can be extremely difficult.
Spencer Woodman, thanks so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Spencer is the lead reporter for the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, whose new investigation is called The Coin Laundry.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.